Okay. We are just going to go ahead and get started. We might still have some people coming. I know that this is the week of the 4th of July, so I think that many people are on vacation and taking time off. I thought about postponing the class, but we're bumping right into other classes, so we're just going to go ahead, and if people can come and catch up next time, then that's great. We also start to sometimes lose people during this class as they start to discover that perhaps this isn't quite what they were looking for. So sometimes we gain, sometimes we lose. Impermanence. So good evening. My name is Sandy Carlson, and it is July 1st, 2014, and this is Session 4 of Buddhism in a Nutshell. Now, I don't believe that anybody is here for the first time. I should ask that. Is anybody here for the first time? No, I recognize all the faces. I just want to make sure. Okay, so before we get started, and this again is going to be probably more for me than it is for you, I want to just take a minute and settle our minds from all of the business of the day. So let's just go ahead and go directly into a brief meditation, just to kind of settle our minds and bring us present. In this class now, we've learned several meditations so far. Okay, we've done scanning the body, bare attention, counting the breaths. We've done a few different ones, and tonight we're going to learn a couple of new meditations, starting with this one. This is called meditation, or this is called Mind Like the Sky. So start to settle into your 7-point meditation posture. Again, the point of this is to be in a position that's comfortable, can be easily sustained so that you can focus your mind on the meditation. It's actually more important that you're comfortable than you be in a perfect position. And so keep that in mind as you work on your posture, starting with the legs, your arms and hands, your back, your eyes, your mouth and jaw, tongue, neck and head. Again, that is the 7-point meditation posture that we've been teaching and learning here at the center. Many high lamas, including Pabanka Rinpoche, who wrote The Liberation of the Palm of Your Hand, talks about an 8th feature of the posture, which is actually breathing. All right. So it's good as you begin to get into this posture and settle in that you start to be aware of your breathing. So quiet your mind. Let go of distracting thoughts. Also think about that any action of your body, your speech, and your mind done with a mind that has negative emotions and delusions is non-virtuous. Actions done with a mind of love and compassion is virtuous. So the mind you have determines the result of your meditation. Okay, in our ordinary perceptions, our thoughts and feelings seem to be all there is to our mind. One thought, feeling, image, or idea after another. All these mental contents just seem to fill up our minds completely, as if our minds are small, finite containers. But this is an illusion, a misperception on our parts. Our minds are vast and infinite, clear and spacious. Our minds have no boundaries and no limits. When we experience the vast, clear spaciousness of our mind, the clarity of our awareness, we begin to see how our thoughts and feelings are like clouds in the sky, simply passing through this vast, spacious awareness, not filling it up. Suddenly, we have some space from the endless attachments, aversions, and dissatisfactions of life. So we're going to set a motivation. We're going to create an altruistic motivation for our meditation session. Think that you are meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be a benefit to all beings. Okay, we're going to start by practicing that bare attention. When you gain a deeper level of concentration and focus, we can loosen our concentration slightly, emphasize the elements of mindfulness in our meditation a little bit more strongly, So it's just breathing. In and out. Allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what that is. Don't identify with the mental elements arising. Simply observe them like a tourist. Allow them to arise as you observe them and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware. Allow your mind's attention to expand, to encompass your entire sphere of experience of consciousness. Forget that there's an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky. Completely clear, vast, spacious, without end. Concentrate on this experience. Identify with this experience. Clarity, spaciousness, and awareness. Our minds are completely clear, just as the sky is completely clear. The light of the sun shines down on us through the clear sky. Our awareness and wisdom shines through the clarity of our minds. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sunshine, but the sky doesn't get upset. The sky doesn't identify with the clouds. The sky doesn't judge. The clouds just pass through the spaciousness of the sky. They come and they go. The clarity and spaciousness of the sky isn't compromised by the clouds. They just arise and pass. Our minds are clear and aware, spacious like the sky. When a thought or an emotion, an idea, an image, or a sensation arises in your mind, just observe it. Let it arise and let it pass. Each thought, each mental event, just like a cloud, your mind, the sky. Concentrate on that experience of space and bliss. Whenever we identify with and are carried away with uncontrollably by a thought or a feeling, we lose any awareness of the spaciousness, the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within which each thought or feeling occurs. Our perspective becomes small and constricted. It is as if that all there is clouds. And we've lost the sky. We lose that wonderful open spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the sky instead of with the clouds, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open spaciousness. Without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and distress, without dissatisfaction and attachment and aversions. Mind like the sky. Now dedicate all the positive energy you have created through the practice of mindful meditation to becoming a better and better person who's more at peace in life and who can bring more peace and well-being to others in every moment of every day. I love that meditation. Has anybody ever tried that one before or something similar? The analogy of that clear blue sky, it's that same analogy that we've talked about with the mirror. The mind is just open like that. So if you can work with that, there's another meditation, mind like the ocean. And that one works really well too, because for some reason for me, the sky and the spaciousness at the beginning, many, many years ago, I couldn't quite grasp that. But for some reason, the exact same meditation, but being deep in the ocean and the water and the fish going by or the thoughts, for some reason, getting that context of water helped me to understand what they were talking about with that openness. But now you guys have all enjoyed meditations and stuff. Did you like that one? Hang on to that one, because when your thoughts come through, it's really good to have that with you during the day, that these are just clouds. Let them go. You don't have to become attached to it and follow that story. I use this one a lot just in my everyday life. Just breathe. Something upsetting at work, just breathe. Mind like the sky, that's just a thought. So, okay. Now, I was going to do two things, so before I forget, first is that Meditation 101 will be starting immediately after this class ends. So we have tonight, and then we have next Tuesday night, and then Buddhism in a Nutshell will be over, and the following week is July 15th, I believe, and Meditation 101 will be starting, and you'll be going through in depth. That will be the whole time. We'll be just focused only on meditation. You'll do several meditation practices, and then you'll have a lot of discussion and help to work on your own ongoing practice of meditation. Jill Marie, I believe, is going to be the leader of that class. She's really good. So I promised I would check on that one. The other one that I didn't get a chance to do is I was going to find the paragraph in this book, The Art of Happiness, where the Dalai Lama actually talks about the soul, you know, the comparison from a Western soul. And I couldn't find my book at home. I've got like 5 copies, and they must all be loaned out right now. So I came here, and I've been looking for it for a while, but I have it highlighted in my other books, and I don't have it here, so I can't find it. So you'll have to wait until next class when I can get to it. And if you have not read this book, this is my all-time favorite book. I get asked that a lot. I would buy stock in this book because it's phenomenal. So those are the two follow-ups that I was going to do there. We're going to try to end the class a little bit early tonight. I'm going to try to stay aware of time because I want to try to do an analytical meditation. Okay, so I'd like to end the class about 8:10, 8:15 to give us time. Again, from a Buddhist perspective, meditation, there are two types of meditation, concentration meditation and analytical meditation. All of the meditations that we've been doing so far are really concentration meditations, which is really learning to work with the mind. Okay, and once we get that, it's just like going to the gym, working out at the gym. Once we've achieved some of that concentration, then we can take the mind to start working on specific aspects, things like anger, things like equanimity, things like compassion. Then we actually start to break things down. So I would like to walk you through one of those meditations, an analytical meditation tonight, just so that you have an experience of both types of Tibetan Buddhist meditation, okay? So we're going to try to kind of whiz through some things, and we only have 2 classes left, so I have to stay on track. So help me watch the time. And we'll see if we can get done about 8:10, because I'd like to do this and do it just like we would actually do an actual meditation, where we take a little bit of time to settle and then go into the discussion. And the other thing I'm going to try to do tonight is I listened, and I can't believe how many times I say, okay, okay, okay. And so I'm going to really try not to say that. It was hilarious. And I think what I'm trying to do is make sure that you're with me, but I've got to find another way to say that. All right? So, all right will now be the new word. It was hilarious. I wouldn't want to listen to me. Our plan for tonight is going to be, we're going to cover precious human rebirth, the Buddhist view of death. And everybody goes, what? Sounds so depressing. It's not. So the Buddhist view of death, the three scopes, and the three principal aspects of the path. So first, we're going to do kind of a quick review. Not all the way back. Now, I see it. Is that a new face back there? Hello? Have you been here before? Welcome. You're okay. You're fine. There's a little bit of a review sheet there. We're on the fourth of five classes, and so we're just going to be going through some basics, but a lot of the beginning part was stuff that you can read, very, very fundamental about Shakyamuni Buddha, a lot of historical stuff, okay? So if you got any questions, just hang with us, all right? First of all, again, a little bit of review. Buddhism is about the mind. Everything is in our mind. This is all about our minds, okay? Completely. Everything you see in this room, everything that we're talking about is our individual minds. This is all about your mind, my mind. We want to develop the positive states of mind that leads to happiness, remove the negative states that causes suffering. What does that mean when we do that? We reach enlightenment. It's really that basic. The mind is consciousness. It is non-physical, so it's not the brain. It is clear, just like the clear sky. That was the meditation that we did. That is what our minds are actually like. It is aware. It has the six awarenesses, sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, and a plus another one that we don't count from a Western perspective, which is mental awareness. Okay? And its function is to know, and there's no beginning and no end, and it's continually changing. So that, again, I'm just winging through review, so stop me if we need to go over something. And literally, you just yell, hey, Sandy, if you want to ask something, okay? So this no beginning and no end, this continually changing mind and that stream of consciousness, that really led us through to rebirth, didn't it? Okay, that stream of consciousness, that mind, constant mental moments, okay, and how that mind is just going. And if we took our mind stream right now and thought about it, what did we have for lunch today? What did we have for breakfast? I'm going to take my food because I'm dieting right now. Okay? So that's all I think about. I have a mind full of food. So just go back. How far back could we go? Well, from a Buddhist perspective, every moment of mind is preceded by another moment of mind. And we should be able to follow that all the way back, okay, to a never-ending stream, to our birth, okay, and go all the way forward through our death and into the next life, because there's that subtle most consciousness. Remember the three levels? Gross, okay, most subtle, and gross, subtle, and most subtle. And that most subtle is that little stream of thought that continues, okay? I'm jumping ahead a little bit with the Lam Rim. That is, and we'll talk about this again, so I'm going to skate through this and it's going to come up again. The Lam Rim is the organization of all of the Buddhist teachings. Okay? It was pulled together by Lama Atisha, who is this statue in front of the Buddha, Lama Atisha. This is really the first Buddhism for Dummies book. Okay? Seriously, that's the best way to say it, because he pulled all of the teachings together in a way that we can really understand them. Okay? And it was... Okay, I can hear it. I was even thinking about it today when I was trying to get prepared. So Lama Tsongkhapa wrote the Lamrim Chenmo, which is the main text, and these are step-by-step instructions on the path to enlightenment. So we'll talk about the Lamrim again in a little bit. We've been covering the Four Noble Truths, and we're kind of talking about what it means to be Buddhist. Okay? Let's just go there for a minute. What does it mean to be a Buddhist? All right? So all of these things that we've been talking about with the Four Noble Truths, the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause, the truth of the cessation, and the truth of the path, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? Happiness? How to be happy? Is that basically what this whole thing is about, how to be happy? Can we just simplify everything? How to be happy? Everybody agree with that, or not really? Kind of. What's that? Okay. That's, yeah. There's no right or wrong answer. I'm trying to develop a discussion. But enlightenment, okay, to know. What's that? Yeah, it's probably both, because if we were enlightened, we'd be happy. Right? Yes? Okay. Is that my word? Okay. So let's look at happiness for a second, okay? Now, we tend, especially in the West, you know, I had a good day at work today. My boss said something great. My client said something. That makes me happy. You know, I went to dinner last night with my husband. We went to this new restaurant, and they had a divine dessert. Oh, that made me happy. Okay? When we talk about happiness, let's define what we mean by happiness. Okay? See, there it is. I'm going to be hearing that all night. I should make a little check mark every time I say it. Is it really happiness or is it pleasure? Okay? There's a lot of things that give us pleasure, but does that make us happy? I'm not going to give you an answer here. Okay? This is a discussion. All right? So I want you to think about what really makes you happy. Okay, we can say these things, and we can say, you know what, chocolate cake makes me happy. Makes me really happy. All right, but if chocolate cake, if there was happiness in that chocolate cake, first of all, wouldn't it always make me happy? Always? If there was happiness in chocolate cake, wouldn't that always? But you know what, the first piece is good. Second piece is good. Third piece, maybe. But the fourth piece, fifth piece, I'm not happy anymore. So there isn't really happiness there. Okay, same thing. I get this new car, and that makes me happy. Okay, and I'm really freaked out, man. I'm parking way at the end of Harris Teeter because I don't want to park by anybody because I don't want to scratch in that car. All right, and that car makes me happy until it starts getting scratched, and then I'm unhappy, and then I'm unhappy with somebody that's done the scratch to the car. So is there happiness in that car? We talk about happiness, but do we really know what that means to us? Again, I'm not going to give you an answer, okay? Go ahead. The mic. Oh, it's right in front of my... I can just point.
Is happiness a state of whatever is happening to us? We're just in a kind of a... Not a flat state, but we maintain just an even keel. Like even if there's like the chocolate cake, we take pleasure in it. You know, it's what we think of, you know, being happy, or even like maybe a situation where most folks might think that it's not a happy situation, but to maintain this constant state of feeling.
Okay, I think that there's some there in that. Okay, so think about this. I'm a cancer survivor, okay? I spent 2 years in chemotherapy, the hair, the whole thing. Not fun, okay? But I'm a pretty happy person, all right? I'm a fairly up person. And I saw many people in chemotherapy that had much worse than me. I saw people that had diagnosis and issues that were far beyond anything I was dealing with. They seemed happy, and they were dealing with some very terrible situations. Okay, we look, we see on Facebook, and we see all of these people that, you know, they're poor. They live in third world countries, but they look happy. Okay, so it's not wealth. Now, I'm not saying that wealth couldn't make our lives easier. Okay, let's be real. But just think about that. Think about that state of mind of happiness. Wouldn't it be great if we could be happy all the time, no matter what? We could be happy even when things aren't going our way. Now, I'm not talking about jumping up and down for glee when you get fired from a job. That's not what I'm talking about. But to not let these outside things disrupt your inside mind. Kind of make sense? So where are we looking for our happiness? Where are we looking? From a Buddhist perspective, we're not looking out there. To be Buddhist means you're not looking out there for your happiness. You're looking in here. You're looking in here. I'm pointing to my brain and my mind, but it's really here. Okay? We're looking inside. That's really what it means to be Buddhist. We're looking inside, not outside, for our happiness, for the causes of our suffering, for how to eliminate some of these things. Okay? So that's really, in a nutshell, no pun intended, what it means to be Buddhist. Okay? We're continuing to work on the Four Noble Truths. Okay, we've talked about the truth of suffering. So we've defined what suffering is, that big word, that dukkha. Again, it's always coming back to the definitions because we in a Western world don't really look at the same things as they did when they were writing these things. Okay, so the translations sometimes need to be worked on. Suffering from our point of view, there were three different types, dukkha, three different types, the suffering of suffering, suffering of change, and the all-pervasive suffering. Okay, truth of the cause, we went through all of those things, ignorance, anger, attachment, pride, doubt, wrong view. Truth of the cessation, it really can't stop. Okay, it really can't stop. There is a way to make this stop. We have to understand karma. We have to understand these non-virtuous actions and virtuous actions, so we have to understand how all of this kind of wraps around. All right? I said it instead of okay. Okay. Everything has a cause. And because the mind is non-physical, it can only be produced by something non-physical. Each moment of mind is produced by a previous moment of mind. This is that continuity of consciousness. Reincarnation and rebirth. Again, we kind of talked about the differences in that. From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, it's really rebirth is what we're talking about. Reincarnation can have a little bit different meaning to some people. Okay, we talked a little bit about samsara, cyclic existence, beginningless, recurring cycle of death and rebirth under the control of karma and delusion. This is where we got into karma last time. It means action, the actual working of cause and effect. Positive actions produce happiness, negative actions produce suffering. And karma is a psychological process. It's all in here. All right, you're planting seeds in your mind. It's just like a garden. The mind's kind of like a garden. Here's another analogy. Okay, so you've got a nice garden, you've raked it all out, you're getting ready to plant seeds. What kind of seeds are you going to plant? Whether it's flowers or vegetables, okay, or you're going to plant a bunch of weeds. It's up to you. Okay, and then you've planted this garden with all of these flowers and vegetables, and you have to constantly go in and weed it. You have to water it. You have to do the conditions that will help those seeds to grow. Or you have to pull out the weeds, pull out the seeds that are going to cause them. That's exactly the analogy that would work with this. Okay? There it is. God, I say that a lot. Laws of karma. Karma is definite. All right? Virtuous actions will bring happiness. Non-virtuous actions bring suffering. Karma expands over time. That's that ripple effect. That's that same thing that... You know, another analogy, words hurt. You know, we may just think it's this simple thing, but it can be so much larger for somebody else. It's that earthquake happens over across the sea and then this great big tidal wave. Karma can expand like that. Good and bad karma. Okay, some little act of kindness. Oh, there's a great YouTube video going around. Have you guys seen that one? How many are on Facebook? Okay. There's a wonderful video going around about... this gentleman, whether Korean, Asian, is giving money to a mom and daughter who are begging. And it's how he helped her go to college. I love those things. So, but that's the expansion, okay? Your little act of kindness. We always kind of tend to talk about the negative, but we should think about the positive just as much. A little act of kindness, a little act of generosity can go so, so far. No result without a cause. You will never experience the result without you having created the cause. Okay, your garden is not going to grow a bunch of weeds unless you put them there. Okay? Karma is not lost. Okay? Actions will always produce a result unless karmic imprints are purified or destroyed, and that is possible. All right? Four aspects of karma, ripening results, what type of rebirth do you get? Okay? This is things that we're working on in order to have a fortunate rebirth. We're going to talk about this more in a little bit. The possessed result, what type of environment that you're born into. Even if you have a human rebirth, you might be born in an environment that would not be beneficial. You could be born in a war zone. You could be born in a third world country. Look at how wonderful a life that we have here. Okay, experiencing the result similar to the cause. You're robbed because you stole. This is a little bit of that, you know, karma as we tend to think about it here in the West. And creating the result similar to the cause. You steal Because that's what your habit was from the past. Okay, habit energy. All right, this is that, just like water, that dripping water on a stone slowly puts a little divot in that rock. So you have to work on getting rid of those habits. You have to purify them. All make sense? Okay, we did Buddhist concepts of karma and rebirth. We talked a little bit about the ethical behaviors, 10 non-virtuous actions, body, speech, and mind, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. We went through these because we all think, well, I'm not going to kill. That's easy. I don't do that. But when you think about it from a Buddhist perspective, it goes through all sentient beings, which means animals, insects, anything, and we kill all the time. And we don't think about it. We kill all the time and we don't think about it. We're taking a walk. We walk around the stupa. There's all those little ants down there. Sometimes I know I must look hysterical at night because I'm bopping all over the place. They must think I'm dancing out there. But think about it. All right? Stealing. I don't ever steal. I would never steal anything. Okay? How many of us have ever taken paper clips or paper or pens? We don't think about that at work. Your employer, you know, they've got how many hundreds or thousands of employees if they're all taking paper clips and stamps and things like that. We don't think about it. So stealing is taking something not offered. Do you guys remember this conversation? Now, we talked about possibly having you think about it, a little exercise, thinking about it on Wednesday. Did anybody actually do it? Think about it the next day? How did that go? Where's the mic? I want to hear these things. Who's got... Did you try it? How did it go?
Anger.
You were angry?
Mm-hmm.
At?
Someone cut me off when I was riding my bike. And
okay.
I got wrecked, and so I was angry at that.
So you were angry at that. So where do you think, so you had an angry mind. Did you stay with it? How long?
Just noticed it and let it go.
See? But you noticed it. That's... There it is right there. You noticed it. That's the trick. We're not going to be perfect right away, but we're noticing it. If you just notice it, that's it.
I washed a little cockroach down the drain. He was not going to go away, so I decided I was going to wash it down the drain, which is killing.
But did you, so were you thinking about, did this class come to you?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah. He was like, well, he wouldn't really do anything to me, but he looked like he wanted to climb on my hand, you know, so I thought, okay, we'll wash him down the drain. So, yeah, so I did think about it.
But you thought about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that's a step. That's a step. Who else? Anybody else? Right behind you.
Well, one of the dragonflies got caught behind... my thermometer on the window, so I went out and let him go so he wasn't caught.
So you thought about this class and you thought about it that way, or have you been doing this for a long time?
I tend to do that, but I was
Thinking about it.
Class, yes.
Okay. Who else? I think you were saying you tried it.
Well, I tried, and I have the most problem with impatience.
Yeah, that's one of mine.
Yeah, so... I don't want to talk about a lot about it.
But you thought about it?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else? But you thought about it. See, that's actually the whole thing, is that you thought about these things. So all of a sudden we planted that seed, and now you're thinking about it. So right now, the anger, okay, right now, you know, maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, you would have stayed there. You would have been mad. You would have reacted bad. Okay? But since you've been practicing and now you've come to this class, you think about it, so you were able to let it go sooner. I think I told you guys about my misquoted cheated, didn't I? That's another one. Okay? So I've been practicing for a long time. I'll give you an exact example. Okay? I've been practicing for years. All right? I've done all of the Discovering Buddhism classes. I've been reading. I've been working with things. We took in the Discovering Buddhism, this is a few years ago now, in the Discovering Buddhism Monday night classes, there's 14 different modules. And you go in depth. You know, we're covering things in 15 minutes and then moving on to the next subject. But that's, you've got 5-6 weeks to just talk about just karma, just bodhicitta, just mind and its potential, all of these things. So we do 5-6 weeks of bodhicitta, which is one we're going to talk about here. And full class, you have the option to take these classes for certification. All right? And I want the certification. So I'm taking the test. I'm doing all of the reading. I'm doing this, man. I've got bodhicitta down. This is love and compassion to the max. All right? And I've got this. I'm taking the test. I whiz the test. Okay? 100%. I've got, I was the only one in the whole class that took the test. A little pride came up there. Right? So I'm feeling pretty good. I got this. No problem. I go home, and my husband has this whole group of people that he's working with on something else, and I have to have all of the women, all of the wives over, right? And there's one wife that I struggle with. I'm a little challenged. She was the only one that could come. Okay? And I'm not happy about this. And I'm complaining to my husband. Right? And all of a sudden it's like, Miss Bodhicitta, look at this. Look at this. I was so shocked that just within not even 2 hours, not even 2 hours, that my mind was already back there. Less than 2 hours, and I was doing this. I got really upset. I cried because it was like, it was horrifying to me. That was absolutely horrifying to me that I did that, that I went there with my mind. I mean, within 2 hours of this. So I sat down, I meditated, I worked on some things. I did one of the meditations that we're going to do at the end called equanimity, and I changed my mind. And so when that woman came over, you know what? I had a phenomenal time. We're still friends. I would never have opened up that way. It was all me. And I just shifted my way of thinking. Now, right there, that is a great explanation of the difference between theoretical knowledge and experiential knowledge. Okay? I had great theory. I knew it. I read it. I studied it. But my experiences were not following through with that. My actions were not following that theoretical knowledge. And I think that we all have a lot of that. We, especially here in the West, we tend to do that. This is the difference between experiential knowledge and why we try to sit with things and work with things. And when you have those aha moments and you own it. Right? To this day, I have that Miss Bodhicitta. I know I told you guys about the impatience, and I don't have time to practice patience right now. That's my mind. But the fact is, I went back and I talked to, thank you. I went back and I talked to my teacher about that. I was really upset. I mean, I was appalled at myself. And she told me, she says, you're missing the point, Sandy. You caught it. You caught it. You know, maybe a year ago you wouldn't even have seen it for, you know, you might not have seen it at all. Or it would have taken you months or some other experience to do it, but you caught it right away. And you fixed it. And you're not going to go there again. Okay? Or you're going to catch it sooner. That's the practice. You caught it. So as we worked on these things, okay, and you just tried it for a day, right? So that's the practice. Just try it and see if you're thinking about it, if you're working with it. Okay? This is where we are now. Precious human rebirth. From a Buddhist perspective, to be born in a precious human life. What do we mean by that? Okay, being born human. We have the ability, because of our human birth, to learn. We have the ability to study the Dharma. Okay, we have the ability to practice. We have the ability to work on our minds. That is a precious human rebirth. Now, we talked a little bit about just a human rebirth. It may not be good enough. Okay, let's just back all the way through this. We have a precious human rebirth, which is so rare. That is rare. The fact that we're sitting here, we all in this room have a precious human rebirth because we're sitting in here talking about the Dharma. We have the wherewithal. First of all, we have the finances. Okay, we got here. We drove here. We got here somehow. Okay, we're all fed. We're all got lights. You know, we're all making it. We're not in a third world country. We're sitting here. So we have, right in this room, we have a precious human rebirth. How many people on this planet do not have this? How many people, I'm just talking people right now, how many people do not have this opportunity? Okay, number one, they're living in a wartime country. They're living in an environment that they just can't. Two, they're living in a place that they don't have a center or teachers or somebody that's helping to go through this to teach the Dharma. Okay, so it's okay. I've got to work on that part. But think about it. All right, precious human rebirth. Now let's take it not even human. Let's go into the animal world here. Okay, sentient beings, any being with a mind. Sentient beings, animals. Animals do not have the ability to cognize the way we do. They can't think, they can't purify, they can't study. They love, and they love to be loved, and all they want to do is be happy too. Geshe-la, our teacher, when he first came to the United States and he was learning the language and talking with people and being around Westerners, we all have these things that we say. Oh, I'd love to be born in my next life as my cat. It was a big one. And he kept hearing that. You want to be born as your cat. Okay? Well, we think about, yeah, you know, my cat has, I've got three. They've got a very easy life. You know, we take care of them, the things that we do. He didn't think about it that way at all. He didn't understand that. It took him a couple of years to actually ask, what are you talking about? Why would you want to be born as a cat? We make jokes about that because they have an easy life. But from a Tibetan Buddhist point of view, they can't study the Dharma. They can't change. So they don't have the ability. Now let's go even one step down. Now let's get into more sentient beings, insects. How many billions of insects are there? Okay, just even in one ant pile. You know, hundreds, thousands. So think about billions. So you, because everybody says, well, you know, how many humans? There's lots of humans. Actually, comparatively to other sentient beings, human, and to have a human life that you have the ability to study. So if you think about how precious that is, here's an analogy that's given. In the ocean, you have this wide, wide ocean. You have a life preserver in the middle of this ocean, bobbing on these waves, little life preserver, little round circles. You have one of those giant sea turtles that's blind. And they're going to swim up to the top of the ocean and put their head right through that. That's the analogy of how difficult it is to get a precious human rebirth from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective. So again, I'm just going to have you guys think about how we're talking about this and why it's so important. And we have this life to try to set ourselves up where, like I said, in that analogy of, you know, Sandy is the carrier of this mind, just like we care for our planet. We want to be environmentalists. We want to take care because we're going to pass on to the next generation. I try to think about that with this mind stream that I have. Right now, I'm the carrier of this mind stream. I'd sure like to set it up. And I often think about who set me up. In some ways, very good. And in some ways, boy, you could have done a little bit better. You know? So I want to try to set up this next life. Okay? Let's do the Buddhist view of death. Where am I time-wise? Okay. Buddhist view of death. Everybody thinks that's very depressing, isn't it? From a Western point of view, we don't even talk about death, do we? We avoid talking about it. We don't want to actually see it. Okay? We don't even talk about aging. And we try everything to avoid aging. Okay? But from a Buddhist standpoint, the view of death is not this scary black hole that it is from a Western perspective. That's part of that is the faith, okay, because we do believe in that rebirth, and there's a very logical process for it, but we actually work on it. Most of us, and I think somebody, and I can't remember who it was, that we talked about fear, and it's usually fear of the unknown. There is an actual death meditation that we do that walks through the stages of death. And the more that we do it, the less fear that we have. I've had two near-death experiences, so I'm not going to go all woo-woo on you. But I'm not as afraid of it as I was because I've actually been through part of it. Okay? I know that sounds really weird. But if you become familiar with it and you know and you actually deal with it, then you will be less afraid. Does that just not make sense? We're all going to die. We know that fact, right? Not a single person in this room is going to get out of this life alive. Right? We know that. Okay? Should that be depressing? It's just a fact. Right? It's funny. It's not depressing. It's a fact. We're not going to get out of this life alive. Nobody does. Okay? So there's a fact. Two, we don't know when. It could happen any second. Somebody could tip over with an aneurysm or heart attack. You could get in a car accident on the way home. You could not wake up tomorrow for whatever reason. You could develop it. We don't know when. We don't know when. But we all act like it's not going to happen, don't we? We do. It's just what we do. We act like it's not going to happen. We go through life like it's not going to happen. All right? I can tell you, and I'm just as bad, even though I've gone through these experiences, and I'm a cancer survivor, I've got so much legal paperwork that I haven't taken care of yet. It's what we do. But we do it, right? We just think it's not going to happen. And our bodies are really quite fragile when you think about it. But again, we really don't. Okay? Also, the Buddhist view of death is... that's a good way to say this. I know. Another exercise for next time. Okay? Tomorrow. I want to do this tomorrow. You guys think about this. I want you to wake up in the morning, and as soon as you can think about this, as soon as it comes in your head, I want you to think, I'm going to die at 6 p.m. tonight. I want you to wake up in the morning, tomorrow morning, and I want you to go, I'm going to die at 6 p.m. Believe me, you're not really going to die. Nobody has ever died from this exercise. All right? But I want you to wake up, and you're going to do that. Oh, I want my coffee, whatever. It's like, oh, that's right. I'm going to die today. Okay, Sandy's head. All right? What would you do in that time? If you knew you were going to die, now, don't quit your job, don't go anything, but think about your day. Think about if you knew you were going to die, would that car cutting you off really cause you that anger? Because that's not important, is it? Okay, the impatience that you feel with people, you know that you're going to die today at 6. Do you want that negativity around? What would you do? How would you treat people? And no, don't say I'd go tell off my boss because it wouldn't matter anymore. Really try to think about this. What would you do? We all have to work, so I'm not saying any of those things. That's that conventional wisdom. Let's not lose that. We have lives, we have jobs, we have families, all of those things. This is a practice that we're going to, this is a mind practice to help you become more aware. What would you do with your life? What would be important to you? How would you want to treat people? How would you want to be treated? What are you going to do with your life? So just try it. We'll talk about it next time. Just think about if you only had one day, what would you do? Now let's take that, because you'll take that practice. We'll talk about this next time, and just expand that. All of a sudden, what do you want your life to be? So let's just leave that there. Three scopes. Where am I at? I'm good. Okay, so the three scopes. Once you have an understanding of karma, rebirth, and the value of our human life, this leads us down to a spiritual path usually, okay? And whatever that spiritual path is, whether it's Dharma, whether it's Christianity, whatever that is, once you start thinking about this type of stuff, you start thinking about spirituality, you start thinking about all of the big questions, why am I here, all of those things, right? That sounds like my ringtone. once we start thinking about that, once we understand karma, once we start thinking about the fact that we only have a finite amount of time on this planet, and we don't even know what that is, it makes us want to do a little bit more with our lives. All right. From a Tibetan Buddhist standpoint, this is when they start getting into the three scopes. We're going to come back to this in a second. All right. The three scopes are part of that lamrim, part of that graduated stages on the path to enlightenment. All right. The three scopes, the first, the lower scope, is we're focused on the next rebirth, the next life, the immediate next life. Okay? That's, in some ways, that tends to be what naturally we kind of tend to worry about. All right? Well, I want to worry about that next life so I can set myself up a little bit better next time. I want to reach the Dharma sooner. I want to discover all of these things sooner so I'm not starting so late in my life. I'd like to start a little bit early. I have all these aspirational wishes. All right? So that's focusing on a fortunate rebirth. The middle scope, we're focusing on liberation from suffering, freedom from cyclic existence. This is kind of that nirvana thing, okay? Where, for me, focusing on my liberation and focusing on me reaching nirvana and me being liberated from cyclic existence. That's the middle scope. You kind of have to go through all of these stages, and you study all of these types of things together. And the greater scope, okay, focused on the full enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I want to become enlightened so that I can help save everybody. I'm going to take responsibility for that. I want to become enlightened to help others. It's just like that lifeguard that learns how to swim, because you're going to go try to save that drowning person. Well, you better know how to swim first. So that's the greater scope. This is all part of the lamrim. Again, the graduated path to enlightenment. As you study Buddhism, and if you move on, you're going to hear these things over and over and over again. They'll be worded differently, but it's all very much the same thing. All right. I'm trying to cover all of these things. Let's go back to the Four Noble Truths. We're pinging back around, but I think hopefully you're starting to see how this all starts to come back together. Okay, we talked about the Four Noble Truths, and we are down to the truth of the path. Okay? Truth of the cessation, this was all about learning karma and understanding how that works so that we know how to stop it. Now, what do we do about it? Renunciation, bodhicitta, and the wisdom of emptiness. Renunciation, that's that big word that everybody just thinks, oh man, this means where we have to give everything up and I can never have fun again. That is not what renunciation means. That's not it. It does not mean that you have to give things up. Renunciation is a mental, it all, again, it's about your mind. It's up here. Okay, we are working on getting rid of attachment. That doesn't mean I have to give up the stuff. It means I give up the attachment part. All right, that means chocolate cake. I order chocolate cake, and I don't get the chocolate cake. They come with carrot cake. I'm okay with that. All right, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to love my husband. It means I'm going to truly, purely love him and want him to be happy, regardless of what that means to me. We are working on us renouncing the negativities and the things that happen in this samsaric life that we have. It is a state of mind. Okay? Now, it just so happens that many times when you go down this path, you discover that you don't need all of those things. Okay, but that's a byproduct. That doesn't mean you have to give things up. It's a byproduct when you discover, you know what, it's not about stuff. So you can let it go. So I think that's where some people get some of the stuff confused and combined. Does that make sense? Okay, it does not mean giving up possessions. It does not mean that you can't be happy. It does not mean that you don't have joy. It does not mean that you don't enjoy things. It actually means that you enjoy them more purely and more truly. Does that make sense? Spend any time at all around Tibetan monks, and they are the most joyful people. And that I want that. That is part of the draw for me, because I can see it. I see it. I have experiential knowledge that they've got something. Okay, now I'm not going to become a nun. Okay, you can renounce all the way and go down a spiritual path. And in that case, you will be giving things up for this path. But it doesn't mean that we don't have renunciation of things that we can do. But it's not giving up the stuff. It's not giving up the joy. It's not giving up the happiness and the things that we have in our lives. Does that make sense? Questions? You guys are always so quiet at the beginning. Okay, bodhicitta. So everybody's good on renunciation. The definite emergence, the state of mind not having the slightest attraction to samsaric pleasures for even a second and having the strong wish for liberation. You have to think, you know, I really am tired of all of this. I want to be happy all the time. I want to get out of this samsaric cycle of life, death, rebirth, unhappiness, happiness, all of that. This is a mental thing. And you have to strongly want to end this. Okay? It means to give up the attachment of things. Bodhicitta. Okay? How many have ever even heard that word before? See, I love you. You guys have already studied all this stuff. A principle, consciousness, or mind that combines the two factors of wishing to free all beings from suffering and wishing to attain enlightenment because of that. I will achieve enlightenment because I want to free all sentient beings, because I want to do it, taking the responsibility. Okay, there's aspirational bodhicitta. You know, we all have that. We just want to be better. And there's engaging, where you're actually starting to try to do things. All right. The six perfections. Now, we went through this whole list of the ick. Ignorance, anger, attachment, pride, doubt, wrong view. You know, again, Buddhists have, we've got lists for lists for lists. And the six perfections, generosity, morality, patience, joyful effort, concentration, wisdom. This is probably, for me, one of the most important lists there is. Generosity, morality, patience, joyful effort, concentration, and wisdom. This is what we work on. Okay, we're trying to get rid of the ick, the bad, and we're trying to work on that. Karmically, if you want to set yourself up for a better life, to set yourself up for things, these are the things that we're working on. To be generous. And it doesn't mean give away all your money. Generosity, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, means to be able to give without regret. So it doesn't do any good for you to give this great big generous donation to Kadampa Center and then think, how am I going to pay the bills next month? That's not good. All right? So generosity means to be able to give without regret. Otherwise, it's not really generosity. To be able to give without strings attached. That's generosity. There's a whole depth into each one of these that is different than how we think about it from a Western. All right, generosity, morality, okay, morality and ethics. It's huge. These are some of the things that we've talked about already. Patience, you know, I think we all know that one. That impatience, that this is one of my big ones. Joyful effort. I have no problem with joyful effort, okay? But now joyful effort means that when it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and you get that phone call, and you need to go help somebody. What's your mind like? You're going to do it, but is there joyful effort in that, or are you just doing it because you have to do it? Or are you worried about somebody who's going to say if you don't do it? Joyful effort, being able to freely give and never lose patience and always, always just persevere no matter what. I see joyful effort in Geshe-la, because he's been here for 15 years and he's still teaching the same types of things with the patience of a saint. All right, the same questions, because it's a new crop of people and all this. And he answers them as joyfully and givingly and freely every single time. You know, that's joyful effort. Concentration and wisdom. We're going to talk about that more next class, because we're going to be getting into wisdom of emptiness. We're not going to touch that one yet, because we'll need the whole class on that one. So this list is huge. This is very important. We've done this already, where we've talked about compassion, what that really means. Again, the definition, the sincere wish that others be free from suffering and its causes. Love, the wish that others have happiness and its causes. Let's talk about equanimity, because that's where we're going to go with the meditation in just a little bit. Equanimity, the absence of the usual discrimination of sentient beings into friend, enemy, and stranger, deriving from the realization that all beings are equal in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. Since beginningless time, all beings have been all things to each other. And this equanimity is the basis for great love, great compassion, and bodhicitta. Okay, so what are we talking about here? Equanimity. I love my husband. I love my children. I like all of you. There are people I don't particularly care for. But everybody just wants to be happy. Even those people I don't particularly care for, they're just trying to get through life. They're just trying to be happy, right? If they're doing things that I consider evil or bad, you know, what a terrible karmic existence they must have. And because I believe in karma, I feel terrible for them because I know the suffering that they're going to be going through later. It's not that I'm so happy you're going to be suffering later. Big difference. Okay? It's having that compassion because we really don't want anybody to suffer, would we? Really? Want anybody to suffer? No. So equanimity is being able to level that out a little bit and just understand. Everybody in this room just wants to be happy. We can all agree with that, right? Wouldn't you agree? Wouldn't you agree that everybody over in Russia, they just all want to be happy? Everybody over in Iran, they just want to be happy. They're just people. So if we can just come to that, even animals, they just want to be happy. You can see it. They want to be fed, be safe, be loved. They don't want to live in fear. They don't want to be afraid. They don't want to be hurting. Even insects, you start spraying them with Raid and all the things that we do, they just want to be happy. They're just trying to escape to the happiness that they know or the pain-free environment that they know. All right, most of the time when they're doing things, they're doing these things with their karmic energy. The mosquitoes, they're not saying, hey, I'm going to go bite you because I don't like you. It's how they live. All right? So it's just if we could figure out a way to have that feeling of equanimity to where we don't just separate people out and put them in boxes. And that's going to be the meditation that we're going to do. All right, so I'm going to talk about it, and then we're going to actually do it. So I'm going to explain it rather than have you guys try to figure this out while I'm explaining it or while I'm doing it. Literally what we're going to do is we're going to walk through a meditation where you're going to pick somebody that you like, somebody that you don't like, and somebody that you just kind of know. Okay? So friend, enemy, stranger. These are the three words that we use. All right? So friend, enemy, stranger. You're going to pick these three people, and you're going to put them up there on the screen. I'm going to tell you how I do it, and then you all figure out how you want to do it. Okay? I literally picture this white screen. Okay? Kind of like a television screen. And the person that I like, the person that I love, is my husband. So I literally have him, because I know him. I know him perfectly. I can see him walking across the screen, standing there, you know, okay, here I am, Sandy. But, so I have him, because I know how I feel about him. Then I have the stranger, the person that I use is, I can use everybody from the lady from the post office, you know, the lady from Target. These people that I know, but I don't really know. Strangers, you all, I know you, but I don't really know you. Okay, so we're not quite strangers, but we really don't know each other. So you could actually pick anybody really in this room. And then somebody that you don't like. Enemy. I actually did this meditation many, many years ago. Again, the experiential part. I do this meditation all the time. I live in the business world, and there are very much times when I'm practicing patience, and I'm struggling with vendors. Okay, many, many years ago. I actually did this meditation. I had to deal with a vendor that I was having trouble with. And, man, I did not like this man, and I was being forced by a client to work with him. All right? And I was not happy about it. I actually sat down and did this meditation, used this, and I brought this man in as the man I don't like, and I worked through this meditation, and by the time I got done, my mind had changed. And I had to go call him to make an appointment because I had to meet him about a project we were doing. And I called, and we had a conversation, and it was just fine. And we had the next conversation, and it got better. But what was the difference? The difference was me, not him. Just by me changing my tone, he changed his. And it worked. This worked very well. I do try to use these things that I have learned here in my everyday life. It works for me. I have experiential knowledge. So this is a meditation that I use in my everyday life, especially when I'm having issues with somebody. I don't, they're not making me happy. So how do I work with this to try to figure out how can I deal with this and how can I work with my mind? There's nothing I can do to change theirs. I can change mine. And these are specific practices that we can do. Okay? So, any questions? Any conversation? Any ideas or thoughts of the day? Who's got a party this weekend? Nobody? Oh, come on. Seriously? One person is going to go do something for the 4th of July. Now, I know that's not true. We all took a vow. We're not going to lie. You have to work all weekend? We're going to have a party next Tuesday night then. If seriously, nobody's going to do anything for the 4th. Are you serious? Fireworks? Okay. Have to work. Okay. Well, that's good. Okay. I think both, because I do this a lot. I do this a lot, and I've seen changes in the other person, and I believe my opinion is that they've changed because I've changed. I mean, if I'm nice to you, you're going to be nice to me, usually. Okay, so tone and the tone that we use, the things that we do, and you can tell if it's real or not. So the fact that I changed and I was sincerely working on myself, I think opened the door a little bit to them being friendlier right back. Now, have I done this and had that person still be? Absolutely, of course. Okay, but it wasn't as bad for me because I could recognize because I changed my mind. Okay, we don't know what that other person is going through. We don't know. That we tend to make up these stories in our mind that they're just so mean or this and that or they're just not a nice person. So, but if you change the story. Okay, that guy at work who's always such a grouch and always doesn't talk, this or that. Change the story. Who knows what his home life is? Okay, maybe he has an ailing mother that's dying that he has to care for and just doesn't have any time and isn't sleeping at night. You know, maybe he's dealing with a bunch of medical bills. Maybe he just lost a child. You know, we don't know. We have no clue. But we tend to make up these stories that work for us so that it allows us to be impatient or angry. We do that, but just try to change the story. So sometimes I'll just do that. It doesn't matter because for me, it's not about them. It's about my mind. And I can't change theirs, but I can change mine so I can change how I'm going to have to deal with it. Because I'm going to have to deal with it regardless. So I might as well change my mind and work with it as best I can. Have patience, have some compassion because I don't know that story, and just get through it. And I've done that. I'm just going to get through it, but try to have it. It doesn't happen as often that way. I've usually found that if I change, they change. And sometimes it would be interesting. What I don't know is did they change or did I just perceive it that way? Because maybe they didn't even change. I just perceived that they changed, and they were that way all the time. You have that. you know, you have friends. We all have friends. Do they have friends that maybe you don't care for? Your friends of friends? Do you know what I'm saying? Now, how come your friend who you like and can get along with and that, you know, you enjoy being around, but they've got that friend and I don't care for that person, but you do? So that's that perception. I always think that one's funny to think about too. You know, that friend of the friend. It's like, how can you like them? You know, so then you start going down there and now so then you're into that gossip stage, right? Stay out of there. But isn't that so? See how that all weaves. But that's that perception. Maybe they never changed. I'm already talking and losing my time. Okay. Let me make sure I got through everything I was supposed to. We are going to talk about the wisdom of emptiness next week. And that'll be our last class. That is a very large subject, I guarantee you. My hope and my aspiration is to just give you a glimpse of what we're talking about there, because that's one of those things that people will study for years. I'm still studying. I'm still studying all of this. But I'm hoping just to get a glimpse for you of that one. So we talked about bodhicitta. We've talked about the six perfections. A bodhisattva, that's one that we didn't talk about. A bodhisattva is that's that one who possesses bodhicitta. So when we talk about a bodhisattva, that is a person who has that bodhicitta mind. Okay? Let me make sure we get through some of these. All right. Any questions at all? Go ahead.
Bodhisattva.
Yep.
Is that like the green Tara?
Green Tara, bodhisattva. Jesus is a bodhisattva to us.
So there are individuals, other
absolutely. The bodhisattva is anyone who has a mind that is completely and without even thinking about it. I think a good analogy is, you know, that mom who can just jump in front of a car to save her child? Okay, to have that kind of love for everyone, that same kind of love, that's a bodhisattva. Somebody who will just give of themselves in order to help other sentient beings. So, yes, the Buddha is not the only bodhisattva. There are bodhisattvas, Mother Teresa. I mean, in my opinion, she's a bodhisattva. I mean, I could just list people that, in my mind, you know, I would think of as a bodhisattva. Men, women, you know, Nelson Mandela. You know, there's people that I would think of that way that just give. That's kind of my interpretation of it. What other questions? Yes. Okay. The Buddha's mind. The question is: after the Buddha died, did his mind stream continue or did it stop? Okay. Since he reached enlightenment, this is where it can get a little, his mind stream would continue. Okay? What he chose to do, we don't know. Because at that point, he could choose. And for all I know, you could be the reincarnation of Shakyamuni Buddha sitting here to help us become enlightened beings. Okay? You have, when you become enlightened, and I don't know because I'm not there, but this is what I have been told and what I have been taught, that you have that ability to choose your next life. You could choose to come here and help to enlighten others. They say that your best teachers are those that you are most challenged by. Okay, the Dalai Lama says that his best teachers right now are the Chinese government. Okay, we don't really learn from the good times as much as that carrot and that stick. Okay, so the Buddha could reincarnate to just about anything, just about any one. Okay, so I have no knowledge of you know, where and what there aren't any stories of that. Well, not that I'm aware of. I shouldn't say that there aren't any, because there very well could be. But one, there's a game that I could play sometimes when I'm sitting here, is that you all are Buddhists, because there's not just one Buddha. You all can become Buddhists. We all have the ability, we all have the innate nature and the ability to become Buddhists. Okay, so I have a little practice that I do sometimes where you all are Buddhists and you're here for my enlightenment. You can read about that. There's some questions right now because of what's going on. There's discussion about where he would and when. Okay? Because you could do a little bit of reading, because this is a very deep subject. Well, the Dalai Lama, we believe, yes, that he can choose. Not that I want to be careful here, because the Panchen Lama, do you guys know how this happens with the Panchen Lama and the Dalai Lama and the recognition? Okay, big, deep subject, so let's not go there too much. But because of what's going on over in China, okay, because of the things going on, the Dalai Lama is being very careful about who and how the next Dalai Lama will be identified. Okay, because the Panchen Lama, and Chris, correct me if I'm wrong here, okay, because the Panchen Lama, who is the identifier of the next Dalai Lama, they alternate, the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama. And so the Panchen Lama is the one that will help to identify the next rebirth of the Dalai Lama. And the Panchen Lama was kidnapped when he was 5, 7, okay, by, and so there is some discrepancy about who the Panchen Lama is. And so the Dalai Lama there's much discussion, and there's many, many different articles and stuff and many speculations about what's going to happen. The Dalai Lama's birthday is this Sunday, just so you know. And we're going to have a special celebration here at the center, just some fun compassion-type events that we do. But he's actually, I can't remember if he's going to be, how old is he now? Late 80s. What's that? 79. Late 70s, that's right. Yeah, there's quite a speculation going on as to who he is going to reincarnate. He's said that he could be a woman this time. He said he could arise in the West. He's said many different things. There's a lot of speculation going on about that right now. But I think the biggest thing to take away from this part of the discussion is that because of what's going on in China and Tibet right now, that is definitely a concern for many, because if the Chinese government chooses who the next Dalai Lama is it real? So it's going to be a very interesting time, and a very challenging time. Other questions? Yes.
Suppose that could be just a capacity, like you don't have that spirit within us. But when there are ideas about how some people aren't precious, they don't have that precious human rebirth, they're just human, they don't have the resources, that seems to contradict.
You're putting a timeline on it.
It's
not necessarily this lifetime. Okay, so we all, every sentient being, every mind bearer has what we call Buddha nature. Every single sentient being has what we call Buddha nature and the opportunity, ability to become a Buddha, to become enlightened. Okay, because we have been born in this precious human life, can probably get there a little faster if we start to wake up and work on it. But again, this is endless eons from beginningless time to infinity and beyond. What's that movie? The child's movie. But so it's not necessarily in this lifetime, not necessarily in the next lifetime. It could be 10 years, it could be 100 years, it could be 1,000,000 years. They talk in eons. Okay, so it's for the ant, you know, the aspirational hope and the bodhicitta wish for that ant would be that he purifies or she purifies that negative karma that they're working through right now and can be done with that negative karma and can be born in a precious human life. That would be the aspirational wish for him, as that cockroach is going down the sink, if we say a little prayer. Okay? Because a lot of it is the intention. What is our intention? We set these motivations. Okay? We set motivations before we meditate, and we dedicate all of that powerful energy afterwards. What we're doing is we're trying to seal it. Okay? Here at the center, before we have meetings, we'll set dedications before meetings to try to be more mindful in that meeting. Okay? When you're practicing, we try to set motivations at the beginning of the day and a dedication at the end of the day. It's trying to do this all the time because it's about becoming more aware. So just that little practice that you did last Wednesday, just to become more aware. Now imagine if you try to do that a little bit every day. So we hope that they purify and that they will have that next human life. So no timeline. Does that help? Does that answer the question? Okay. All right. Let's try to do this equanimity meditation. And the first thing that I'm going to do is we're going to set the meditation, we're going to calm the mind, and I'm really going to try to give you a couple of minutes to do whatever one of those meditations that you liked with the bare attention, the just breathing in and out, the counting, your breaths. Okay, I'm going to give you 2 minutes where I'm quiet and you just settle into that because that's the practice. You come to the meditation. We've got to just stop that noise, prepare our mind. So I will always in my own practice do a little bit of that, you know, breathing meditation before I'll start an analytical. Okay, so I'm going to give you a couple of minutes in here so that I'm not just talking, so you're not hearing my voice through all of this. Okay? There it is again. See? How many times did I say it today? All right. A couple of deep breaths. Get yourself into that stable position, 7-point meditation posture. Focus your attention on your breath. Use any one of the various meditations, the breathing meditations that we've done, and settle your mind into the moment and into a more concentrated state. And we're going to set a motivation. We are going to generate the strong intention to do this meditation in order to overcome self-centered bias and judgments and to develop the mind of perfect equanimity and balance toward others. And Imagine in the space in front of you three people. Someone you like, someone you dislike, and someone you feel indifferent toward. Keep these three images in your mind throughout this meditation. First, focus on your friend. Allow your feelings for that person to arise strongly. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely and truly a friend. That's a person who is good to you and fulfills your needs and wishes. And feel how you really want this person to be happy. And identify yourself with these good feelings. Now shift your attention to your enemy, the person that you dislike and who is not kind to you, who doesn't satisfy your needs, who annoys you or makes you angry, who hurts you. And regard this person carefully. And look carefully at the feelings that you have about this person. Finally, shift your attention to the so-called stranger, the person you just barely know but whom you neither like or dislike. Look carefully at that person and note carefully your feelings of indifference. Now consider and recognize that the nature of your relationship with each of these three people and the labels that you have put on each of them are based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think of people who have been your friend, but then became your enemy, or vice versa. Or strangers who have become friends or enemies. Each of these labels is temporary and impermanent. It's just what the situation is at this current time. Now move your attention back to your friend and imagine a situation that would cause that friendship to end. Imagine your friend turning against you and experience the resentment, anger, and hurt that you would feel in such a situation. Do you still feel warm and friendly feelings toward that person? Do you still wish him or her well and want that person to be happy? Where is your friend now? Remember that this person was not your friend before you were acquainted, and recognize how easily this person could cease to be your friend now, just as you've imagined. Think to yourself that there's no sound reason for feeling kind and loving toward only the friend at this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can become tomorrow's enemy. Now move your attention to the present enemy. Imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together and become close, a common interest, a word of praise or kindness. Look at that person and your feelings toward them very carefully. Are you feeling softening by this imagining? Becoming warmer? You can learn to feel warmly towards your enemies. This has happened before and will happen again. Why do we hold so strongly to the concept that this person is definitely enemy? Now move your attention to the stranger. Imagine how one act of kindness or anger from this person could immediately turn him or her into friend or enemy, respectively. There is no inherent, definite stranger here. There is no sound reason for the feelings of indifference that we hold on to. Remember that your present friend and your present enemy were both strangers to you beforehand. And this enemy could become a friend or an enemy now. Maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you and think about the fragile impermanence of these relationships. It is only your misconceived belief in the concreteness of these labels of friend, enemy, and stranger that holds your mind back from the possibility of change and fluidity. Your friend, enemy, and stranger all want happiness just as much as you do. In this respect, we are all equal. Also, everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve ultimate clarity and compassion. The differences that we see in people are superficial, based only on our mistaken and narrow self-centered views. In fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and our compassion. None of this means that we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is necessary. Naturally, we feel closer to some people and are wise to keep our distance from others. This is not in any way contradictory to the meditation. The point of the meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being, whether they help or harm us at some point in time, and to see that the labels that we put on others are often arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable. Dedicate our positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Did you see your people? Like I said, that's a great meditation, and I use it a lot. So again, the discrimination part doesn't mean we don't. If somebody's hurting, unkind, those things, get away. Okay, we can't ever not be safe. You can practice equanimity from a distance. Any questions? Okay, yes. That's always those fun questions. Your karma to be here and hear Geshe-la is yours. His karma to be here and create the merit that he's creating is his. So you cannot, from a karmic perspective, affect that way. Conventionally, does he make a difference conventionally to us? Absolutely. There's a big difference in what we're talking about.
So even though those two people are coming together, it's still their individual karmas that are bringing them together.
Right.
And
Chris? Okay. I just want to make sure I'm explaining it well. I was waiting for this question. Well, now that one I haven't heard. So I'll explain what I have been taught. Okay, when you die, there's actual stages of death. And there is a full-on meditation, but there's actual stages. And when you actually die, your mind stream, that little, most subtle mind, goes into what we call the bardo, B-A-R-D-O, the bardo. And anywhere from that moment to 49 days is when the rebirth. Okay, so you can be in the bardo for just a few minutes or for up to 49 days. But on that 49th day, you will be karmically drawn to another rebirth. Now, those that practice, the Dalai Lama does a death meditation practice, I want to say, 3, 4, 5 times a day, okay, as preparation. I've done it maybe once a month, all right? But it's this preparation because there is a belief, because this is our mind that we're talking about, there's a belief that there's an opportunity to affect that rebirth in that time. Okay, but there's a bardo. Question? The tantric path, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. Somewhat, there's different tantric practices, but the basically we've talked about the different practices with the Mahayana and all of that kind of stuff. The tantric path is what they would consider a faster path. Okay, if you really are not going to be able to wait and go through all of the steps and you want to know now, then you take more of a tantric path. Okay, and that, we're not going to talk a whole lot about this. That's very difficult to explain, and there's a lot of misconceptions about tantra in the United States. Well, actually all over the world. But it's a faster path to enlighten, what they consider a faster path, because you're going to do more in-depth and more intensive practices. So that's the goal of a lot of things. That's the goal of the death meditation. It's not just the goal of the tantric path. And there's a lot of different reasons that's not the only goal to tantra. It's definitely one of them. And there'll be different practices that could lead down that death practice a little bit more. But, yeah, the bardo. How many know that movie, Jacob's Ladder? Ever heard of that movie? Yeah, that actually is a little bit of, it was billed as a horror movie, and Tim Robbins, it's old, this is an old movie, I'm really dating myself here, but that actually was a story written a little bit about the bardo, but it didn't come out well, and so they billed it as a horror movie. So that's an old one, go look that one up. You'll see a lot of that stuff. There's actually a lot of movies out there with Buddhist concepts in them, a lot. So that's really all there is for tonight. I intend to sit here and talk a little bit more. I just wanted to make sure you had the meditation. We'll talk about the wisdom of emptiness a little bit more. What were you going to try to do tomorrow morning? Try it. What are you going to do? Just think about how precious you would feel this time would be. Now, you still have to go to work. You still have to do these things, but just maybe see how it would change. Okay? So thank you all. If you have questions, let me know. My email, membership@kadampacenter.org. Several of you are emailing me. I love it. We have one more class. So thank you. It's a quiet night.